So right now it is April 6:10 p.m. in Arizona time, April 28, 2020. This is the full month of 420, kind of a historic thing for any pothead, which is kind of a funny thing because the term 420 is just kind of like a arbitrary thing that kind of became part of pothead culture. But it is something that did become part of pothead culture. And so ironically, the biggest, I guess most important 420 of our lifetime, of any time that we're, I mean, the last century, is happening at a time where it's basically the biggest unemployment, the worst economy that we've had in my entire life. I'm 40 years old, and this is the worst economy we've ever had in my life. Right now, we have, I mean, globally, everything's kind of going nuts, but in the U.S. alone, there's over 26 million Americans who filed for unemployment by the end of today, by April 28th. And I am one of them. I'm a self-employed freelance worker, usually a 1099 worker, a contractor. And I've been struggling since the coronavirus because, I mean, a lot of the media organizations have tightened their budgets, especially for freelancers and contributors, guest contributors. And on the other hand, the marketing people are, I mean, people are cutting back, brands are cutting back on their marketing budgets. So that's, I mean, clearly that I work in media and marketing as a freelancer, freelance writer. So that kind of puts me square in the middle of these 26 million Americans. And honestly, I mean, I feel like this is kind of a good thing that this happened. I mean, it's obviously not a good thing. It's kind of hard to say that the coronavirus lockdown and the global pandemic is in any way good, but I mean, a lot of good is going to come out of this because this is an unprecedented economic difficulty that we're facing these days. And I mean, I know that I'm not alone in this. I have not received my stimulus package, my stimulus payment, that $1,200 we were initially promised. I have not received that. I've been filing unemployment for weekly for the last 5 weeks, and I have yet to receive a payment. It's most likely going to be another month before any of this stuff actually comes through. So basically, we're at a point where, I mean, we're going into the summer and school's been closed for a while. All of live events have been basically closed down. All of our lives have been shut down effectively. And we are now all kind of in this boat where, I mean, we're living in this world now. There's nothing that we can do to change it. Right now, toilet paper is still kind of hard to find. You're actually more than likely you've been able to find toilet paper. That's hard for people to actually stock up on too, because it's, I mean, it's easy to stock up on, I guess. It's hard to hoard the way that people made it sound. Personally, I've got enough toilet paper to get through the summer at least. I'm good on that, and I did that on purpose because I always have been stocking up on things. It's just a way to save money. That's how extreme couponing works. You buy things in bulk in certain cycles, and that's the cheapest way to do it because there's certain staples that you just know that you're going to need. And that's kind of what's been going on, is people were doing that on top of the people that are stockpiling. The funny thing about it is that the people that are in the media that are complaining about they're basically mocking the pro open the people that are there, they're trying to open the country essentially. They're getting mocked by the mainstream media, by a lot of the Hollywood elites and the media elitists. And in all reality, I mean, we'll take Patton Oswalt. I like to use that as an example. He was going through complaining about how, you know, people have gone through harder things, and you know, your great grandparents had to go through the Great War, and all you have to do is deal with sitting at home watching Netflix and eating delivery, and people can't do it. And the thing is that the average person probably can't afford Netflix. Like, most people I know are on their parents' or on some family member's Netflix plan. They're not on their own because that's their, I mean, it's the only way they can afford it. It's a luxury purchase. I mean, they're all cable cutters too. They might I have a Hulu account, and I mean, I share that with other people and use their HBO and Netflix accounts. It's just kind of the way that it is. And I mean, there's just so many streaming services. It's become so expensive. So, I mean, to say that, like, oh yeah, well, that's what you're doing, Patton Oswalt. You're ordering delivery and Netflix. Oh, delivery is other thing. Is that, everyone's trying to say to support your local restaurants and this and that. But I mean, the fact is that eating out is probably the biggest waste of money that you're going to ever go through in your entire life. And on top of that, getting delivery, I mean, you're paying for a premium to get that delivery, and that delivery money isn't really going into like the delivery person's hand. It's not like you get DoorDash and you're paying that 10% extra delivery fee, and that goes to the DoorDash person. It doesn't. The tip that you give them might go all the way to them. We haven't really been sure that, and that's only relatively new. That happened by the end of last year, the end of 2019. So, like, and it's not just DoorDash. I pick on them, but it's DoorDash, Postmates, Instacart, all of these delivery services. They're basically using contractors that are using. Not only are you a contractor if you're driving for one of these places, you're also a you're using your own car, so you're not getting any kind of benefits. You're not getting any kind of retirement plan of any kind, not even a 401k, much less pension. And we'll get into some time of the differences of how a 401k is just basically a diluted down pension, but you're not getting any of these protections. You're not getting health insurance. You're not getting any paid time off or vacation or sick leave. You just have to work every single day. And these are all of the things that our forefathers and all of our, I mean, all the labor movement, of the 1920s that came out of the Great Depression, the Industrial Revolution, all the stuff that came through, or the 1910s, I guess, all the way through the 1930s even. Everything that came through all that was supposed to help us. The New Deal is what it was, that Roosevelt's New Deal was part of it. But this was all supposed to help us as the working class kind of rise up from poverty. Because, I mean, before that, there were distinct caste systems that were in place in the entire world, including the US. And I mean, there was just the dividing line between the haves and the have-nots. You were either living in luxury, or you were enslaved by the people who were living in luxury, so you were doing the work for them. And I mean, as we've seen, some people can be good with their underlings, and some people are bad. And it wasn't until I mean, they had the Great Depression. There was all the factory dock workers. There was this same thing where the essential workers were essential. And those companies that were in those industries were able to easily exploit workers and take any of our labor and give us. I mean, imagine working 7 days a week with no day off. Imagine working while you're sick, doing all sorts of things. And you don't have to imagine that anymore, because all these things are happening. All these worker protections have kind of been eroded over the years, because we've let workers' unions kind of erode over the years. We've allowed the working class to fall into poverty and essentially get us all thrown downwards, while the 1% gain more wealth. And they're consolidating their wealth. They're continuing it by making sure that they invest in other things and emerging markets, and creating a bigger wealth gap than we've ever. I mean, we already have had a bigger wealth gap than ever. And I mean, now we're just seeing the effects of how much the labor force has been really screwed. And I mean, you see that, and just like I mentioned with the 401k, the advent of the 401k, when they initially, what you would do is you would work your entire life in your career, and then after, 25 years, 30 years, whatever it is, you retire and you get, the same pay, or maybe 80 or 75% pay. Whatever it is, that was your pension. And that's what, I mean, you paid money into that pension plan throughout the years in your career, and that got paid out to you. And from the 1980s on, through Reaganomics, that basically pensions have all but disappeared, and 401ks are what replace them. And with the 401k, it's basically, it's you making your own financial decisions and your own investments and things like that. And there are some good that come with 401k, but in all reality, it's a dilution of pensions. People wanted their pensions and to be able to have an actual retirement. And we've lost all that. People that are, it's not even just boomers. Boomers aren't even the oldest people. It's Generation X even. I'm at the tail end of Generation X. I'm the young end of Generation X and the old end of millennials. And I'm 40 years old. So, I mean, think about that. When you think about boomers being the old people, it's actually Generation X. And when you think about millennials being the young whippersnappers, it's actually Generation Z and younger. But millennials have, I mean, millennial, a 39, 38-year-old millennial has kids that could be 18 and graduating right now that you're talking about their kids. And the older people are still working basically in the same types of jobs. I mean, I've been working since I was 12 at paper routes, delivering newspapers for the Sierra Vista Herald when I was 12 years old, actually 10 years old. I was splitting up with my brother. And even before that, I mean, my parents had us outside. They would hold garage sales. We'd go and sell Kool-Aid, and we'd go through, or not even just Kool-Aid, lemonade too, but the Kool-Aid points, we'd go through all those, save those up and use those as a way to, you know, buy toys or candy, whatever it is that we wanted. My parents were very good about teaching us how to be frugal with our everything, with our time, because it was important. We grew up kind of poor, and my parents, I mean, my mom especially, was not, she was not raised in a rich household, so she was used to struggling a lot. And that got instilled into me and my brother and I. We've always just been used to working. So, I mean, even when I was a kid, we would take our skateboards and our bikes and we would go deliver pizza for the local pizza place. We'd deliver coupons and under people's in the apartment complexes and their mailboxes, or we would put it into the on your people's cars, on your windshields in the parking lots. And any of these kind of things, we would you know, take whatever odd jobs that we could do. I mean, you make $20 that day if you were lucky, and it was a good day, because I mean, that guy probably made a bunch more than whoever it was that was paying us at the time. Looking back on it, it's kind of funny, because I think about, like, as an adult, like, I can't ever imagine having the balls to go, like, pay some kids, like, as a stranger that I don't know, like, coming up to some kids with some cash and like, hey, I got a job for you. But I mean, people do that, and that's what I was looking for as a kid too. So, but as an adult, you know, I always thought that there was going to be an age where I retired, because it was just, I mean, my parents were in the military, both of them, and they always made it sound like there was this path to life, that you got a job. I mean, you went to school, you got training, you went to college, you got a job, joined the army, really, is what they wanted you to do, and then had that as a career, and then had your secondary career, and then after that, you retire and you're done. And I mean, my dad does have a fixed income. He's making about $4,000 a month in fixed income, but that's the difference between, or that's total of his military pension, his retirement, he put in like 23 years, I believe, he put into the military and into the army, and his disability plus his Social Security. And I mean, with that, he's living okay. It's not that he's not struggling. And I mean, he also has the VA benefits that are helping him with his healthcare. And he's by no means like living on the streets or anything. He lives a comfortable life, but he's also, I mean, he's not going on any trips anytime soon. He's not going to do anything extravagant. He's not going to do anything beyond his means. He's kind of stuck in that hole of where he's at. And it's okay. That's a way to live. It's nothing wrong with that. That is an honorable way to live. But A, that's a lot harder for people to achieve these days. And B, I mean, it's just not something that I personally was ever kind of looking for. I always kind of wanted to work for myself versus having to work for somebody else. And I mean, with this COVID-19 thing, what's going on is, I mean, everybody, first off, the CARES Act was a great idea in theory, and it was great that it got signed by everybody in the government, but in execution, I mean, the fact is, I don't have my money. I don't know anybody that has gotten theirs yet, but I certainly haven't, and we're over a month. I mean, again, it's April 28th. This was the middle, I believe, of March when this was initially promised, and it was, I mean, we thought we were going to get everything by the end of March, and that obviously hasn't happened. Thankfully, I'm doing okay right now, personally, I mean, I'm making ends meet even if I'm having to take out credit to do it, basically. And there are people who probably aren't doing so well and might be in way worse positions. And I mean, I've talked to my landlord personally just before anything even happened, because as soon as both the president and the governor of Arizona, where I'm living at, as soon as Doug Ducey is who that is, as soon as both of them had made the announcements, the public announcements, that they were going to suspend all foreclosures and evictions, I immediately talked to my landlord about it, and they had no problem letting me know that, I mean, basically they would absolutely evict anybody that, I mean, they would move forward. This was nothing. Essentially, the way they put it was that the governor and the president are more than welcome to request that they don't do it, but they can't force them to. They don't have any stake in it. And I do appreciate that. I mean, we do live in the country where they're absolutely correct, where that they cannot be forced to do that. But, I mean, we're also living through another crazy time where, I mean, the fact is that 20% of people, one out of every five Americans, 26 million of us, are unemployed at the moment. And that really sucks. And it's not even... So I worked at Countrywide during the foreclosure crisis, the Great Recession. I worked at Balboa Insurance, which is a subsidiary of Countrywide, and some of our clients included Lehman Brothers, IndyMac, and GMAC, all of which basically went under and during that time frame. And so I mean, I've sat at ground zero of some crazy, crazy things during the foreclosure crisis. And one of the big things that anytime you ever complained about it to any of the managers, I mean, the chant there, basically the theme song, was just be lucky that you have a job, be thankful that you have a job, be happy that you even have any money coming in, because a lot of people don't. And they were right. I mean, we were working in foreclosures. It's what we did for a living. So we saw all these people that didn't have a job, all the so-called deadbeats. And I mean, we were happy that we had jobs. We were lucky that we had jobs. We were happy to have incomes. And we're now in that point where, I mean, basically everybody is struggling at this point. I don't think there's anybody in any industry that really knows that they're 100%. I mean, you could be recession proof, but this is worse than a recession. This is like depression era. Things that are happening right now are unprecedented in our economy. And I mean, it's crazy to live through this time. I can't believe I'm 40 years old and I'm dealing with this for the first time in my life. And I mean, thankfully my parents have always taught me how to handle this kind of thing. So I'm alive, but again, we have these people that are stuck in here. So what's going on right now? It's Instacart, Walmart, Amazon, Whole Foods, Target, and FedEx. All of these companies are essentially planning for a walkout, and they did it this week, the 1st of May. They're going to schedule their walkout, and this is coming at an unprecedented time in a lot of ways, because all of these companies are essentially our supply line in this country. Anybody who is staying at home and making fun of all the people that are protesting to open the country, no matter what, you're using some kind of delivery. I mean, you may not do it all the time, but you're getting at least one delivery meal and you're getting at least like one grocery delivery. You had to have done that in the last month. And odds are you're doing a lot more than that. And you're using FedEx and Target and Walmart and Whole Foods and Instacart and Amazon a lot. And these people know that because they're adding a million new jobs. I mean, there's 26 million people that are losing their jobs, but a million new jobs have been added just between Instacart, Walmart, and Amazon alone in the month of March. And this is going on as this virus is spreading. And people are getting sick, and they're getting told that you know, be lucky to have a job. And if you're working for Amazon or Walmart, you already know that those places do not – that really is just a last resort job, basically. There's no safety net beneath you, and you're going to get, I mean, the worst of the hardest of the work for the littlest money, basically. And I mean, that's because we don't have unions and have these types of worker strikes going on. It's so bad that, I mean, when you watch the show Superstore on NBC, that's what America Ferrera, I mean, she basically has that entire show, that entire series before she left was all about employees' rights and strikes and things like that, because those are issues that have long been facing retail. Those have been facing retail employees since I was in retail. I mean, you were always struggling. You were always working for minimum wage. I mean, I was working for $6, $7 and change when I was working for Blockbuster and Best Buy and Circuit City. Best Buy is the only one of those companies still around. I worked for Sears in retail, GNC, a couple of places, and they're all basically the same. They all, you were struggling is really what it boils down to. And now we're at the point where these workers are suddenly finally getting together. I mean, the May 1st is probably, hopefully, going to be a really important walkout. Hopefully this works out, and I better see this affect something, because, I mean, I've been hearing about FedEx workers and UPS, all this stuff, trying to strike for a long time, for years, but they were told that they couldn't. And there was one point, 2 years ago, I believe it was the 2018 holiday season, where they were told that they weren't allowed to, because it would disrupt everything, and they were told to do it later. The judge actually told them that they weren't allowed to. And it's insane to think about, because that's the whole point of these. I mean, you can't just force them to keep working in some way. And the whole point of disrupting the supply chain, that's the whole point of this worker strike. And Amazon tried to do a strike before, but the problem is that the person who was organizing it, I mean, they straight up put a full-on PR like attack against this person. And as a whistleblower, I mean, I blew the whistle on Bank of America, Countrywide, after Bank of America, after they bought it. And I mean, I have some folders where it's called long-term security concern, Brian Penny, where they have these folders that are there to talk about how to destroy my reputation and enterprise risk management, reputation management, and how to make me look bad to make themselves look good. And so I know that this is something that they do. And I mean, they're showing that right now that is something that they're doing. That's what Amazon did to the leader of the employee movement. And I mean, they have so many things that these people need to get. And if you're lucky, you work for Walmart and Amazon, you have like the bare minimum wage, bare minimum kind of anything going on. But otherwise, you're working for some place like Instacart, where not only do you use your own car, but I mean, there are scams that people run basically where they offer you like a $20, $30 tip just to get you to take their order fast and skip ahead of the line. And then they have 48 hours or whatever it is to change their tip after the delivery. And, you know, they can change their tip and they lower it and get rid of that tip. So that you thought you got $20, and after you get the delivery done, you find out you ended up getting zero. So it's got to be very disheartening when you're going through, and I mean, you're already using your own gas, you're already putting the wear and tear in your own vehicle, and on top of that, I mean, you're not getting any medical, you're not getting any pay time off whatsoever, you're earning no benefits whatsoever, and then you get screwed. I mean, you think that you're making like $300 at the end of the week, and it turns out you've only made $100 because all these tips just kind of drop through. And I mean, that's just the start of it. I mean, most of these businesses are paying a 5 or 10% service fee to the places like DoorDash and Uber Eats and Grubhub and all those kind of things, just so that they can be listed on there. And you're starting to see where a lot of these businesses are moving around. And Tucson specifically, DoorDash was one of the bigger places out here. Postmates was a little bit smaller, and the rest of them like barely had anything. And now you can see where Postmates is getting a lot bigger. Grubhub is getting a little bit bigger. Eat Streets now here. Uber Eats has gotten a bigger footprint because people are just chasing, the businesses are chasing whatever deal they can get the best delivery deal without having to pay, you know, an arm and a leg, because they already have, I mean, their margins are probably 20% on average anyways, 15-20%. So when they're paying five to 10 of that to Grubhub or the delivery service, whoever it may be, that it kills them. And this is the kind of thing that we're seeing, is that, I mean, we have all these middle layers and all these things that are going on. Some prices are definitely going to have to go up. That's just the way that it is. And it's not just things that are out right now. Like, I get why hand sanitizer and alcohol and or rubbing alcohol, whatever, disinfectants and disinfectant wipes. I get why all those things would probably go up in price. They've spiked in price, actually. I don't know why I say probably, because I know that they have. Personally, I go through a lot of the isopropyl alcohol, and I've had to buy, usually, I mean, it's like $2 the last time I bought it, and thankfully I got some on Amazon back in January, February range, and I mean, I'm down to my last bottle. After that, I got to use the ethanol alcohol that we bought from a distillery. It's a local distillery that all the distilleries now are making their own alcohol, and some of them are donating like however many barrels to, you know, whatever local hospital or healthcare place, and then they're selling the rest of it to people. And it's just like the Katrina, Hurricane Katrina. After Hurricane Katrina, Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch made a bunch of Budweiser cans of water, basically, because they had the processing plants. They just put water into it so that during the FEMA emergency, they can hand out water. And some people kept those. Those are now selling for, you know, 10, 20 bucks for those cans that were given out for free as commemorative cans. And so now they have all these distilleries that make, like, you know, like Buffalo Trace, that has a huge following and a cult collector following. And now they're, I mean, Buffalo Trace decides to make a hand sanitizer that's obviously going to be a collectible as well. And I mean, that's happening all over, all the bourbons, whiskey, scotches especially, but any of the places. So, I mean, what we got was a friend of mine had bought a gallon, 1.25 gallon, for, it was like a $200, I want to say, distilled ethanol, whatever it is. It's a grape alcohol, and I mean, it's like 99% alcohol, so I mean, it's pretty hardcore. You could actually drink it if you wanted to. It's just like Everclear, but it's, I mean, I might try some later if I'm mixing into something, but right now it's used as a backup for, it's sitting there as a backup for when my isopropyl alcohol goes through. And that's because I use isopropyl alcohol for a glass cleaner. It's a very useful thing for any medical marijuana patient or pothead or anybody to have, just to have sanitation. And, you know, I have a bunch of 420 wipes. Those are starting to go down. And I have, I mean, once all that stuff goes through, we're going to see what it is like with the workers at the few places that are actually open, the few businesses that are deemed essential, if they're all on strike. And I mean, as we get into the summer, these businesses are going to become even more essential. And I don't know, the difference between the haves and the have-nots is just going to continue getting worse. I've seen a couple of different things that are meant to address this. One of them is the CARES Act, and I have not gotten anything from that. I've not gotten anything from the Small Business Association, the Payroll Protection Plan, any of these funds. I have not gotten the $12 stimulus payment, none of it. And after that, eventually, they're talking about doing basically like a $2,000 payment for every American, and then was it like $1,000 a month, something like that, for the rest of the year. And that would be helpful. That would be great. The problem is that it's going to cost a lot of money on one hand. And also what they're doing is they're trying to create a cryptocurrency, which is great on many ends. Anybody who's been following cryptocurrency knows that is digital money. There's thousands of those things at this point, and we now know proof of how they work. Proof of work, I was trying not to say, because proof of work is a cryptocurrency term, but the cryptocurrency is a valid option, and we long ago have moved to fiat currencies from the gold-backed currencies, so it's not a huge step to go into like a U.S. dollar cryptocurrency. That's not necessarily going to mean that you know, Bitcoin and all these other things are going to rise in value, but I mean, most likely Bitcoin will. But this is all, I mean, the good thing about it is that you'll get a lot of money out of this. The bad thing about it is that they're going to track how you spend that money. And I mean, that money is going to continuously being tracked. So just for the rest of our lives, those dollars are going to be kind of separated from the rest of them. And soon it'll just be, I mean, that's just the test pilot. Once they figure it out, that all of it's going to be like that. I'm just going to add to it. There are times I personally lobbied to the FHMA, Federal Housing Association, Finance Association. They're the ones that oversee Freddie Mae have a conservatorship over Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae, or Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae at the time, and we're talking to them about how, I mean, they needed to have, the government needs to have some kind of a centralized mortgage thing, because right now they have all the reporting going on, but because the banks and the loan servicers are allowed to do this on their own and without anybody really watching them, they obviously, there's corruption. There's corruption anywhere that there's no regulation. And for the most part, it is what it is. But I mean, that particular, our houses, our insurance, it's kind of a big thing to become homeless. And we're starting to see that show up where, I mean, we're going to find out with these evictions and foreclosures, what's going to happen. Even the way they're doing it right now, it's kind of like it's a forbearance. So they're pushing off the money that you might owe, not giving you a forgiveness. It's a loan forbearance is a delay versus a forgiveness, which is you just don't owe the money anymore. The debt is paid. And those are two different things. And the difference between those is going to become very apparent by the end of this year. So I mean, basically, right now, we're in an unprecedented economy. We have some crazy shit that's going on, and I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows what's really going to happen next. No matter, nothing that you put your money in is safe. You can't depend on your 401k. You can't depend on the market. You can't depend on your savings accounts. You can't even prepay your bank, because you never know. They might go out of business. Something might happen. You never know what's going to happen from day to day. But this is the world that we live in. We're in a repeat of the Great Depression. We'll call it the Great Depression 2, the sequel. It's 100 years later, and we are going through, I mean, it was the Roaring 20s that started everything out. The Great Depression ended in the 20s, 1920s, but it's starting the 2020s, because, I mean, this is where we're at. This from March on, it has just been an insane new world that we're all getting used to, and I hope everyone's getting used to it in a positive way. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of people that are struggling, and there's a lot of people that they're going through some shit that, I mean, we all have to kind of protect our own. We have to keep a lookout for ourselves. And I mean, personally, I'm getting on here, and I'm going to start doing as many podcasts as I possibly can. I'm doing some YouTube stuff. You can always check out my YouTube at thoughtforyourpenny.com. And in addition to the sponsorships that are playing on here that you've already heard, you can also check out, I have an affiliation with Dr. Dabber. So if you go to drdabber.com and or vapor.com, VAPOR.com, you go to either of those sites and you use the promo code Penny, PENNY 15, and you will get a 15% off your entire purchase. Again, that's Penny, PENNY, like the coin, and then 15 to get 15% off your purchase at either drdabber.com or vapor.com. And I will be coming on here. I'm a former bank whistleblower turned freelance writer, so I'm going to be coming on, starting a podcast, and for the rest of this year, basically tracking what's going on with this new economy, this new world that we live in, and seeing some of the trends that are going through while explaining kind of the counterculture things that are happening. I hope you've enjoyed everything that you've listened to so far, and stay tuned. We're going to be joining some other podcasters soon and kind of building up the network and going from there. Hope you all have a wonderful night, and we'll see you next time. Thought for Your Penny. And until then, check out thoughtforyourpenny.com.